You're listening to the Missiology Podcast. In this episode, your host, Martin Rodriguez, sits down with Alan Ye, Associate Professor of Intercultural Studies at Biola University. They discuss Alan's experiences in the study of mission and his hopes for the future of the field.
So, Alan, tell me about God's agency in your life as a missiologist. It would be great if you could describe a time that you recognized God was shaping you as a missiologist. Tell me how this happened.
Absolutely. Although I have never audibly heard God's voice in my life, there are several times where I've unmistakably heard him. And this was one of them. When I was in college at Yale University, I majored in history. And I don't know why I did that other than Yale has a really good history department. Okay. And I enjoyed my classes there. Okay. But being from Asian American parents, their question was, what are you going to do with that? And my dad is a businessman. He really wanted me to do business. He wanted me to major in econ. I tried it. I hated it. So I thought, what am I going to do? Well, I just wanted to study that which I was interested in. So I did that, but I wasn't sure about my career trajectory. But then I went to the Urbana Missions Conference because I was involved with Campus Crusade for Christ as an undergrad. And a bunch of us went to Urbana together, and all these college students converged together to talk about missions and why they love missions, and they're worshiping together, and I was just struck by God there. I can state for a fact that I have, you know, hardly ever been more called to something as that moment. I remember weeping in that stadium with 20,000 people and saying, I'm called to missions somehow. I just knew it. God struck me like thunder with that. And now, I didn't know what form or shape that would take. I just knew that missions was on my heart, and you know, it cohered really nicely with my study of history. I realized I really loved studying, and I loved God, I loved cultures and traveling. My dad, as a businessman, would take me all around the world when I was young, so I really got exposed to a lot of countries. And so this is why when the convergence all came together, if you love God, you love study, you love travel and cultures, like, well, being a missions professor was the perfect thing. But I didn't know it at the time. All I knew was that I was going to do something related to missions. And it was at Urbana. And here's the other thing about Urbana. Later on, I ended up writing a book called Polycentric Missiology, which is about the Edinburgh 1910 World Missionary Conference. One of the things about Edinburgh 1910 is that the organizer, John Mott, was a huge proponent of college students. He wanted to mobilize college students for missions. And he had this rallying cry. The motto of Edinburgh 1910 was the evangelization of the world in this generation. And he mobilized the YMCA, the student volunteer movement. By the way, the SVM today has its modern day descendant in Biola's SMU, the Student Missionary Union, so which is the largest student run missions organization in the country. And so it is really amazing to see how Urbana and, you know, the SMU are sort of like the descendants of Edinburgh 1910.
It's fantastic. And thank you for sharing that. So tell me about a high point, perhaps as a practitioner or as a scholar in the field of missiology, when you felt a time when you felt really especially engaged, especially motivated, an experience that helped, you would say, shape your missiology.
Yes. When I went to seminary at Gordon-Conwell near Boston, my missions professor was Dr. Timothy Tennant, and some of you may know him because he is now the president of Asbury Theological Seminary in Wilmore, Kentucky. And Dr. Tennant was formative in my life. I was his research assistant, and his teaching was phenomenal, and his perspective on things. And so, but not only as a scholar, but also as a practitioner, I actually went on a missions trip with him to India one summer. He's an expert on India, so he goes there every summer. And it was really an eye-opening experience. India, even though I had traveled a lot in my life, India was probably the place that was most different from any other place I've ever been to. But we were primarily housed in Dehradun at the Luther New Theological School, which was founded by George Shavanika Manil, who's a good friend of Dr. Tennant's. And so we went there and we did ministry out of that seminary. And boy, that was such a formative time for me. And the sights, the smells, the colors, the experiences, the religions, the food, the weather, everything was different. But so rich. And actually, I need to back up to Urbana. So this is really interesting. When I was at Urbana, although there were a lot of amazing speakers there, the three people that I remember the most were not actually the plenary speakers. They were student interviewees, or student testimonies, I should say. So they actually had a Japanese woman, an Indian man, and a Jewish woman come up and give their testimonies. And I remember being thunderstruck by this. I thought, wow, like, you have somebody who should have traditionally been, you know, a Buddhist, a Hindu, and a Jew. And they're all Christians. These are not what you would think of as your typical Christian. Mm-hmm. And yet, all three of them were professing their belief in Christ. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, that is what really moved me. And I went to seminary, and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do other than get an MDiv for now. And I figured I could do a lot with that. But what was really interesting is that I ended up going to India on a missions trip with Dr. Tennant. And then I went on another missions trip to Japan with Asian Access. Back then, it was called Life Ministries. And I was influenced by Dr. Doug Birdsall, who is the former CEO of the Lausanne movement. But back then, he was the missions director at Gordon-Conwell. So I got to spend time with Doug Birdsall, Tim Tennant, you know. So these two guys were so formative in my life. And I went to Japan with Doug's organization. And when I went on my missions trip, the person who debriefed me, who trained me, was the same Japanese woman who gave her testimony at Urbana. I couldn't believe it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
that's fantastic.
So I was like, this is a sign. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And then I also did a study tour to Israel with Gordon Conwell, with my Old Testament professor. So I ended up hitting all three of those countries, which was really interesting. Yeah. And but Dr. Tennant, so this is how he helped me. After I finished my MDiv, I was going to go on to get a THM and a PhD. And I was trying to put together my research proposal and trying to think of what I could write on. And I decided I wanted to do a biography of someone. And my initial thought was to do a biography of Harold John Ockenguy, who was the founder of Gordon-Conwell Seminary and the first president of Gordon-Conwell, as well as the first president of Fuller Seminary. And he really inspired me. But although Ockenguy was the first on my radar, the other person that was also on my radar was Orlando Costas, who was a Puerto Rican missiologist who was part of the American Baptist denomination, which was my denomination. And I talked to Dr. Tennant about this, and he said, oh, you have to do it on Orlando Costas. He says, there have been too many dissertations written on white men. And he said, don't just write it about Westerners. He says, write it about majority world or two-thirds world scholars, people from the global south. And so now, bear in mind, this was back in the year 2000. Hmm. The field of world Christianity was just a twinkle in the eyes of Andrew Walls and Lamansine and these other scholars. But Dr. Tennant saw the writing on the wall, and he was like, this is the future.
Right.
And so I went with Orlando Costas. And that's eventually who I wrote my doctoral dissertation on. And I'm so glad I did. Yeah. And Orlando, one of the things I focused on in my doctoral dissertation is that Orlando was not just a Latino theologian, he was a world theologian. So he supported INFIMIT, which is the International Fellowship of Missions Theologians from the Two-Thirds World. And so he had friends from all over the world, like Vinay Samuel from India, Kwame Bediako from Ghana, and like all these guys who...
Trained by Verkeil, right?
Yeah, and he was trained by Johannes Verkeil in the Free University of Amsterdam. So, who was a Dutch, but who had missionary experience in Indonesia. So, I mean, so Orlando's experience was very broad, and I was inspired by him. And even, you know, for myself, I'm of Chinese American background, and you know, I tell people that I'm a Chinese guy from the United States who studied a Latin American in England because I did my doctoral dissertation at Oxford.
Because welcome to the world, right? Because welcome to what the world is going to increasingly look like.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Yeah. And Orlando Costas was similar. You know, he was a Puerto Rican who grew up in Connecticut, who did his doctoral dissertation under a Dutch guy who was a missionary in Indonesia. And he was influenced by these Africans and Asians from all around the world. And so, Yeah, that all those things converged, and my mind continually was blown, you know, day after day, as I realized that this new vista was ever expanding.
So maybe name one or two primary books, or perhaps there are some conversations that you can remember that with significant figures that have just contributed to your research and your ministry. What was the content of those conversations? It could be with books, or it can be, you know, actual conversations. And why did they make a difference for you?
Sure. I would say my number one inspiration and influence would be Andrew Walls. Andrew Walls is the godfather of the study of the field of world Christianity, or global theology, or however you say it. But when I was in seminary at Gordon-Conwell, the next step was I went to Edinburgh, Scotland, and partially was because of Andrew Walls. He founded the Center for the Study of Christianity in the Non-Western World. Today, it has changed its name to the Center for the Study of World Christianity, I believe. I think they wanted to get the word non out of there, but I think that was a good choice. But nonetheless, Andrew Walls is the man. He was writing about world Christianity in 1996, actually well before that, but you know, really this did not become a popular thing until the 21st century, but he was writing about this in the 90s. And his book, The Missionary Movement in Christian History, is still one of my favorite books ever. And you know, I know that Philip Jenkins popularized the field of world Christianity because he wrote the book The Next Christendom, but Andrew Walls is the man. He's the one who started it all. And I went to Edinburgh partially just to, you know, be part of his center that he established. And he was already retired by that time, but that was part of the inspiration. And also his disciple was Laman Sane. And Laman Sane is now, you know, is now coming to his own as well. He's obviously a very well-known scholar of world Christianity. He's now at Yale University, Yale Divinity School. And so together, Walls and Sane have produced what is known as the Yale-Edinburgh Conference on the study of world Christianity and history of the two-thirds world. And it is an annual conference that switches back and forth between Yale and Edinburgh. And I've been to that conference numerous times because interestingly, I'm an alum of both Edinburgh and Yale. I did my undergrad at Yale, and I did my Master of Theology at Edinburgh. And so, but Andrew Walls and Laman Sane have been fantastic. I was actually the research assistant for Laman Sane 1 year at Yale. And even though I didn't have that much interaction with Andrew Walls at Edinburgh since he was retired, but you know, he's always around, and I've seen him speak in lots of different places around the world. And actually, later on, I ended up doing my doctorate at Oxford University. And when I was asked to choose a college, because there's like 39 colleges at Oxford, and I chose Exeter College. Well, the funny thing is, the initial reason I chose it is because I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan. I'm like such a, you know, Inklings geek. And I chose the college that J.R.R. Tolkien was in, so Exeter College. And I was like, oh yeah, I want to choose this place. And I went to Exeter College, and then I realized that there were a bunch of other illustrious alumni. For example, N.T. Wright was also an alum of Exeter College. And then Andrew Walls was an alum of Exeter College. And as a runner, I found out that Roger Bannister, the first man to break the 4-minute mile in history, was an alum of Exeter College. So, and it's so funny because these men, because they're alums of Exeter, they sometimes like stop at Exeter to speak, or when they get invited or whatnot. And so I'm thinking, oh, I'm in the same college as Tolkien, Walls, Wright, and Bannister. Like, this is like all these heroes of mine. So I got pretty lucky, I suppose.
That's awesome. So you describe Andrew Walls as the godfather of world Christianity. How would you distinguish, if any at all, between missiology and global Christianity or world Christianity?
Great question. Missions is the study of how people who don't have the gospel receive the gospel. World Christianity is the study of, once people have received the gospel, how do they manifest it? How do they show their Christianity? In what ways do they integrate it with their culture? In what ways do they worship? In what ways do they theologize? In what ways do they make sense of God? And in what ways do they interface their newfound faith with their culture, their language, and everything, you know? Mm-hmm. How does it play into their politics? That's what world Christianity is.
Excellent. Would you consider yourself a professor of both, a researcher and academic that is an expert in both of these fields, or where do you land?
Yes, I see world Christianity as a subset of missiology, because even though they are different, because missiology is the sort of the pre-gospel and world Christianity is the post-gospel, but sort of missiology is just, it's everything. It is the entire process. So, and I like to think of, you know, when you think of the Great Commission, the primary verb in the Great Commission is to go and make disciples. It is not actually to evangelize, all right? And so people think that missions is just evangelism. And I'm like, no, you know what? Evangelism and discipleship, the difference between them is like the difference between a wedding and the marriage. Evangelism is like a wedding. It is the initiatory act that kicks off the relationship. Whereas discipleship is more like marriage, because it is the day-to-day lived out experience with the other, where you have to die to yourself daily. And it is what Eugene Peterson calls the long road of obedience, you know? And let's face it, evangelism is a lot more sexy than discipleship, because people, you come back from a mission trip, people want to know, how many people did you save? Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's the primary question we should be focused on. I think we should be focused on discipleship, the day-to-day lived-out experience with the other. In other words, how do we continually follow Jesus in every aspect of our life? And how does that interface with our culture? And so I think that's what the study of world Christianity is. And it is so beautiful to see how different places and different people around the world express Christianity. You know, Christianity is the largest religion on earth. It's not the fastest growing religion on earth. That's actually Islam, but it is the largest. 1 in 3 people on earth claim Christianity as their religion. And a lot of it is due to the fact that in the last 25 to 50 years, there has been this massive shift of the center of gravity to the majority world, or the non-Western world, or the global south, or the majority world, or two-thirds world, or however you say it. There's so many different ways of saying it. And when you have a shift of the center of gravity of Christianity to the majority world, this is a Copernican shift in a paradigm of how to think about Christianity. Because, you know, Copernicus was the guy who discovered that the sun doesn't revolve around the earth revolves around the sun. And this kind of blew everyone's mind. Oh my gosh, we have to reframe how we think about the galaxy and the universe. And in the same way, now that Christianity is mainly in the two-thirds world, you know, Philip Jenkins has this famous phrase, which I will say actually is more attributable to Dana Robert, who is also one of my heroes. She's probably the foremost female missiologist in the world. She's a professor at Boston University, but she actually came up with this phrase first, and then Philip Jenkins wrote it in his book, The Next Christendom, and it got totally popularized. But Dana Robert says, the average Christian on earth today is a black or brown female from the southern hemisphere who is probably poor, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, this completely changes our paradigm of thinking that the average Christian on earth is a white male from the northern hemisphere who is rich, right? And now, how does this change things? Well, first of all, we also have to think about who are the receptors and who are the doers of mission. And so this means that there are maybe more missionaries going from the global south to the global north nowadays than the other way around. More of the missionaries are female. More of the missionaries are black or brown. They're not white. Missionaries are going places you would never anticipate. The biggest church in London today is a Nigerian church, Kingsway International. And so Nigerians are going to England. Chinese are going back to Jerusalem, across the Silk Road, across Central Asia. Mm-hmm. Brazilians are going to the Middle East. You know, I mean, everyone's going everywhere. Yeah. And so my book, Polycentric Missiology, its subtitle is 21st Century Mission from Everyone to Everywhere. Mm-hmm. 100 years ago, mission was from the West to the rest. Mm-hmm. Today, it's from everyone to everywhere. Mm-hmm. And you know what? We think that this is actually a new thing. Actually, it's an old thing. Go back all the way to the first century. In the first century, or the early church, first few centuries, you know, we had the five patriarchates of Christianity, the five bishoprics or the five centers of Christianity, and they were Rome, Constantinople, Antioch, Jerusalem, and Alexandria. Okay, if you look at that, one is in Europe, two are in Asia, one is in Africa, and one is in Eurasia. That Constantinople sort of straddled both. And if you think about where Israel is located, it is located at the crossroads of three continents, Europe, Asia, and Africa. So the gospel was actually meant to go in three different directions, and it did in the first century, right? I mean, some of the early Christian countries were Ethiopia, mm-hmm. right? We see this in Acts chapter 8. The Ethiopian eunuch takes the gospel back with him. And the Apostle Thomas went all the way to India, right? So in the first century, India had the gospel. And of course, we know Greece had the gospel, the Apostle Paul, and Turkey, Asia Minor, right? The Middle East. So really, the polycentric missiology is original. This whole thing about Europe being Christian and no one else being Christian, that's a Middle Ages conception. And that's not what mission is anymore. I think mission is from everyone to everywhere, and it's completely changed. And here's the other thing. Now younger people aren't missionaries. We talked about college students earlier, but really the Christians are getting younger, increasingly younger on earth. A lot of populations in the world are aging, and it's the explosion of the youth who are becoming Christians. So, you know, you might have heard of the 1040 window, which is 10 degrees north to 40 degrees north latitude across Africa, Middle East, and Asia, which is where most of the non-Christians on earth are today, which is where most of the world religions are today. But another thing that people have come up with is the 414 window, which is age. So people who accept Christ between the ages of 4 and 14 are most likely to hold on to their faith for the rest of their life. And so I think we need to focus on the youth. The youth are not only a prime target, but they're also prime missionaries to be, you know. And I think we need to focus on females. Women are the future of the church. They're already two-thirds of the church worldwide. You know, some places even more. When I did my missions trip to Japan, I mean, the church was like 70% women, you know. And you come here to Biola, it's not just in the majority world. Here at Biola, you have two-thirds female on campus as well. Most Christian colleges are like that. Mm-hmm. And so I think, and then also poverty. Right? Or although the majority of Christians are now in the majority or two-thirds world, that's not where the power and the money is. That's still concentrated in the West. Mm-hmm. So what I would love to see is for the West to empower the majority world with books, with resources, with money, so that they can influence people around the world and share their resources. I think two-thirds world people are now the primary missionaries. It doesn't mean we in the West should stop doing missions, but they are the majority of the Christians around the world. But we need to help equip them because we still have the majority of the money. But you know what? This is actually a hopeful sign because now we're going back to the first century. The first century is when Christians were the persecuted and powerless and poor. And then when Christianity became linked with the rich in the West, well, that's not really what the biblical Christianity looks like. And now, today, we're seeing more of a return to what biblical Christianity originally looked like.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Alan. One last question. Tell me about your hopes for the field of missiology. If you had two, perhaps three wishes about how you'd like to see missiology shaped over the next decade or two, what are your hopes for the changing shape of missiology?
I think I want to focus on discipleship. I still think evangelism is very important. Evangelism and Frontier Missions is the focus of what Ralph Winter did with the U.S. Center for World Missions, which is now called Frontier Ventures. There's still so many unreached people groups on Earth, and God bless them. I want to see that happen. But I think for me personally, I want to see more discipleship happening. This means building more seminaries in the majority world, not shipping people over here. Because first of all, that's prohibitively expensive for them to fly over here and live over here for years. Secondly, we're going to be teaching them non-contextual theology when they come over here. We're going to be teaching them stuff that's not relevant to their home context. So I want to see us create seminaries in the majority world, which teaches them what they need to know to equip them for ministry. Also, some years ago, maybe a decade ago, the Africa Bible Commentary was written, and 70 African scholars wrote this, published by a Kenyan publisher, Word of Life. And they said, we need a commentary on the entire Bible, because in their own words, they said, African Christianity is a mile wide and an inch deep. So they similarly saw the need for discipleship. They said, there's so many Christians in Africa, but they don't have depth. They have a lot of breadth. So I think the development of this commentary series, as well as a development of more seminaries, is so necessary. And then in South Asia, a bunch of theologians got together, and they had this is their own words, they said they had a moment of holy jealousy when they saw the Africa Bible Commentary. So they said, well, the Africans did it, why can't we do it? So they did the South Asia Bible Commentary. And then next coming out is going to be the Latin American Bible Commentary. And then after that, they're going to come out with the Middle Eastern Bible Commentary and the Slavic Bible Commentary, which is for East Asia. And I'm pushing right now really hard for an East Asia Bible Commentary, because I'm like, seriously, there's none in the works? Like, China and Korea have so many Christians. How can there not be an East Asia Bible Commentary? But I would love to see things like this, more seminaries, more Bible commentaries, more theology coming out of the two-thirds world. And I would also love to see more ecumenical conferences where they're developing new theology and new creeds. And that we can have a worldwide exchange. So I don't know if you're familiar with Angela Duckworth, who University of Pennsylvania professor who wrote a book called Grit. And grit is basically endurance and perseverance. And she said that grit is actually the most common, or not the most common, but the best indicator of success in life. More than intelligence or skill, it's grit. Like, do you not cave or not give up? Do you persevere? And part of the reason why maybe younger people today, millennials, you know, unfortunately they've been saddled with these phrases like snowflake, they're fragile and they crumble easily or whatever. But and this is why Angela Duckworth wrote her book, Grit. Hey, you gotta have more perseverance. And one of the best things we can teach our kids these days is grit. But she also said that part of the reason is when people have attention deficit, right? And they see something new and that captures their attention, but once it is no longer new, they stop being interested in it. And she said one of the ways to counter that, you know, instead of just having to watch 5-second YouTube videos all the time and otherwise you can't keep your attention, she said one of the ways to counter that is to see the newness in nuance and not just in introduction. So as you get more advanced with things, some people might say, this is boring because I know this already. But instead of seeing it that way, see the newness in the nuance, not in the introduction to it. And same thing with Christianity, see the nuance in the theology. And I think if we can continually see what are the new horizons that God has for us, and this whole Copernican shift of world Christianity is going to create so much nuance that I think we're going to be so excited to see what comes out of theology and Christianity from the two-thirds world in the next few generations.
This is fantastic, Alan. And you're going to be in your research, your writing is going to continue to be at the forefront of this conversation. And so we're really grateful to get a chance to do a podcast interview with you just 11 years into your career and many more years to come. So thank you again for both your contributions to missiology and for this time that you've given us here at Missiology Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.